We're talking about California's change in its school funding formula to LCFF, the local control funding formula, with Samantha Tron, the Senior Director for Education Policy at the group Children Now. Samantha, you just identified groups that will get some special attention, so lower-income households, English learners, and students in foster care. How do you target money for just those specific kids? I mean, obviously, there's some whole communities where you'll find lots of English learners and low-income households, but how do you target foster kids particularly?
Well, and that's actually an exciting element of the law. I mean, in so many respects, foster youth are difficult to identify, and we haven't really had the systems in place to provide information to school leaders about, you know, where you might have foster youth who need additional supports and services. And so one of the elements that's within LCFF that I think many foster advocates, youth advocates are excited about is that the systems at the state level are actually going to start talking to each other. And so the state agency that tracks foster youth is going to be talking with the school agency so that we're going to have better information and we can provide that to district leaders. Obviously protecting privacy around, some of the specific elements, but identifying these youth and really saying you need to provide stepped-up support and services, and you need to be thinking about these youth and engaging their guardians differently than just the traditional kind of parent outreach. So, you know, identifying who their education rights holder is, who their social worker is, and really thinking through providing supports and services to them in a unique way. And so I think that will be new for California school districts. We've had some work in the past in this area, but I think it's really going to be a statewide focus, which is exciting. Important point to note is that as we're talking about how we target services for low-income students and English learners, one of the pieces that we are still working on, as I mentioned, the law is in transition, there's actually some regulations that are being developed by the state agency, the State Board of Education, to further define what that means and what that looks like. And so there's a lot of stakeholder activity, and actually the board is meeting next week to begin finalizing these regs before January.
So is it considered that it'll begin to take place next school year?
So it's starting now in terms of how we're allocating the dollars to districts and charter schools and county offices, but all of the particular rules and regulations about how we account for the resources and how local communities, you know, develop their services and develop their plans and their budgets are still being worked through. So this is very much a transition year.
Will this require a lot of additional work from local school districts? Are they going to have to put people and hours into tasks that they have not done up till now?
It's going to be different work. Because we took away a lot of the input-oriented, monitoring that was part of the, previous kind of cumbersome system where it was very much telling districts and counties and charters how to do their job and sending them in multiple directions, 50 programs all with different requirements. That was particularly onerous. The new approach, I think that one of the exciting elements about it is that it is asking the school leaders to work with their broader community to develop a plan, to look at their vision for how they want to serve kids broadly, and then each of these unique subgroups, and really develop a narrative about what they're going to do, what their goals are, what their expectations are, and then how they're actually going to link that to their resources, which is something we haven't done in California. We have planning processes, but they often sit on the shelf. These will be very live documents because they relate to all of the funding that school communities have to bring to bear for kids.
Is the overall dollar figure greater once LCFF is completely implemented? I mean, can California potentially get off that number 49 position?
It is a real challenge, especially since we're coming off of some years of very deep cuts to public education. I mean, we took schools to their knees during the Great Recession, and we're just building our way out of that. I mean, we're estimating that to fully implement LCFF, which is not a high number, which won't necessarily put us even in the middle of the pack in terms of other states, is going to take several years. And so, in order to really change the dynamic around the amount of resources, we need to just prioritize public education, whether that's in the context of the legislature or broadly through voters, because the resource issue is a real issue.
When you talk about the processes and procedures, though, I mean, it sounds like that you're doing away with one set of of directives and dimensions of things that had to be taken care of, but then adding some others in. I mean, do you think it'll end up a wash for the districts? Are you hearing much back from the districts yet about saying, okay, this is actually better than what we had before? Oh, my God, you're burying us in paperwork.
Right. There's been some dynamic tension around that as we've been trying to figure out, you know, what's the right balance? Because we absolutely need to provide flexibility. This is what this, you know, there's one of the four, you know, fundamental principles about what we are trying to achieve, so that local communities can actually innovate and be responsive to their kids, right? I mean, that is a core principle. The balancing act is providing enough information so that everyone, all stakeholders, can monitor progress and can see, you know, what services and supports are being provided. And I think we can get there. There are a lot of stakeholders who are really engaged in the process, and we're in problem-solve state, you know, just trying to really figure out how do we specifically do this to make sure we achieve these goals.
Samantha Tron's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Senior Director for Education Policy at Children Now, and we're talking about LCFF, the Local Control Funding Formula for California Public Schools that is now in the works. You can join us on the Exchange at 541-552-6782 or by email at jx@jeffnet.org. One of the things that gets written up a lot in articles about local control funding formula, LCFF, is that the belief among districts that are doing pretty well financially that they will have less money to work with from the state than before. What is the truth there?
So the way we designed the transition between where we are now to where we're going was to be very mindful and careful that we didn't cut anyone. So no one is going to be losing actual dollars from one year to the next, and virtually every district is going to grow. I think the distinction is that because we had such unevenness throughout the state in terms of, you know, these historical formulas, that there are some districts who are concerned that they're not going to grow as fast as they had hoped. And that is a very real issue. You know, folks are advocating for the kids in their community and wanting to make sure that they can invest in programs and services. It is that the statewide vantage point was to make sure that everyone is growing and that, some may grow faster than others because they've historically received less or because they have really high need populations. So, I think that overall resource question that we were talking about earlier really is kind of a fundamental touchstone that we need to address in California.
Local control is obviously an attractive term, but I mean, how is it actually exercised through this funding formula then? I mean, what control do local districts have that they didn't have before?
They're going to have a whole lot of latitude in order to really define what they want, what services and supports they want to provide to kids. And so, you know, one of the other pieces that the state board is wrestling with in addition to these fiscal regulations is developing a template for how districts will develop plans. And, you know, essentially it lays out a process where the district and their community work together to look at their data, look at how kids are doing, look at where the gaps in achievement are, and begin thinking about, you know, what are we trying to accomplish for all of these students, and what are our expectations in terms of how fast this will grow and how fast kids will perform, and what we're going to bring to bear in terms of services and support. And there's a real wide latitude in terms of folks identifying what types of programs they want to put into place, which is unheard of in California.
Samantha, when you think about where dollars are spent most efficiently in school systems, is there any rebalancing, not just from district to district, but also from grade to grade? Will there be more money spent in lower grades? Because it seems like the earlier you set a child on a pathway, the more firmly that pathway can be held, rather than trying to make changes when they're in seventh grade, for example. Is there any rebalancing of money to the lower grades in that way?
So two answers. One, the way we structured the formula was a recognition towards that, and so providing a higher amount of funding for those early grades. That being said, districts and communities don't have to necessarily spend the money there if they don't want to. They have a lot of options, and they really can craft a program that prioritizes those early grades. In fact, you know, we've been talking with lots of districts and communities throughout California who are interested in thinking even earlier than kindergarten and trying to figure out how they build robust, high-quality programs, early learning and development programs that could include preschool and home visitation and some other things. So, again, they have a lot of latitude to identify what their needs are, what their community needs and student needs are, and then craft programs based on those needs.
But then how is the effectiveness of those programs measured? I mean, are we talking about testing, or are there some other benchmarks that are used to assess the effectiveness of what the districts come up with?
Right. So a couple of things. In terms of the different areas of focus, the state has identified 8 priority areas that the state really cares about in terms of developing the plans. And so this includes, you know, outcomes like achievement and graduation and dropout rate, but it also includes a nod to some broader indicators of you know, for example, school climate, whether or not kids feel safe and connected, whether or not they're coming to school, and whether or not parents are engaged. And so these are some of the things that, you know, will be teed up as questions for communities to think through as they're developing their plans, again, with no requirements about how they specifically implement, but certainly encouraging them to assess and think these things through. In terms of, you know, what's good enough and what in terms, you know, of goals and progress, I do think that's a critical question. And it's something that, you know, as a state, we're going to have to balance what the state role is and the local role is on that very point. And so there's a lot of conversations about whether or not in the context of the regs, we want to provide a whole lot of flexibility to, even more flexibility to communities if they can demonstrate that they really are achieving more for high-need kids. I think a lot of the particulars around how that's going to play out still need to be defined, but it's part of the mix.
Are there any programs out there that are already in place to try to get parents more engaged that seem to be good templates for other districts? Because that does seem to get discussed a lot these days, that as much blame as seems to fall on the teachers and the schools, the fact is that if kids are not ready when they walk in the door of the school, that doesn't fall on the school itself.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of, as you said, a lot of focus on trying to figure out how to get this right. And I think it's twofold. One is, how do you engage a parent and family in their individual child's education and support, you know, all those kind of day-to-day things? And I do think there are a lot of good models out there, especially starting early and helping to build that understanding and rapport and connection between the school and the family. In addition, I know another piece of that many of us and the broader field has been talking about is, how do you engage parents and community members authentically in some of the decision making? And so, because, you know, school finance and policy, a lot of this can be really wonky and hard to get in, especially since educators love to throw around acronyms. You know, we're into wonk, right? So, you know, how do you make that accessible so that people can bring their values to bear and really, you know, have a voice in some of the decision making? And LCFF really calls for that. It asks for districts and charters and county offices to authentically engage community. And so I think we're going to start tracking and identifying a lot of really effective models and sharing that broadly.
So, Samantha Tron, you said that the state board has a meeting coming up. Is it next month?
It's actually next week.
Next week, okay.
So on November 7th, starting at 8 a.m., we're going to be having a public hearing. And it's actually a really important meeting because it's the first time that the board has seen kind of a straw man proposal, draft regulations, about what this could look like. And it's the only meeting they have between now and the time they have to adopt emergency regulations in January. And so stakeholders, you know, I know that there are a lot of people who intend to be there and testify and provide letters to really provide specific recommendations to the board about how to balance all of these goals that we have for LCFF. And the board will be providing direction to staff to further refine the regulations that are going to be brought back before them in January.
You said emergency regulations.
Yes, because so it's a technical term because of the timeline for how quickly they have to be adopted, because we are mid-year. So what the board will do is the review process will be slightly truncated, but then they'll send it out for permanent regulations, which is a longer. It's the difference between, I think, 5 days of review versus 45 days. But those things will happen pretty quickly, close together.
So for our listeners in Reading or Fortuna or Wairika, wherever, wondering, okay, what do I do if I want to get involved in this process of implementation in my district? What are the recommendations you'd have for that parent, that person?
Yeah, I think right now one of the things that we're strongly encouraging district leaders, charters, county offices, and stakeholders, community groups, parent groups, is to begin setting the table for the conversation. Unfortunately, over the last 5 years, the way that we've engaged community has been around where do we cut? And those are really hard conversations, and you know, in lots of communities, we're seeing the repercussions of that dynamic. And so there really needs to be an opportunity for people to come together and say, okay, we have this opportunity to rebuild. And we're still, you know, weathering the storm a little bit. I mean, some districts, their budgets aren't in balance, and so they may still need to cut a little bit before they get structurally sound and then can start to rebuild. And so laying that groundwork, being very transparent and clear about what the resources are that are at hand, what people know and don't know, because, again, the regulations are still being developed, and then talking more broadly about what's our vision for kids and having that aspirational goal, and then really drilling down, okay, the aspiration is important, but how do we get from here to there, and what are the specific things that we're going to do together, educators and community leaders and parents, to get this done. And, you know, it's a big conversation, and it can be broken up into manageable pieces. This has been done before. It's just in some ways, because we're coming off of cuts, that muscle has atrophied a bit. So now's the time to begin that work.
Given that it's going to take a while to implement, and, of course, elections tend to happen, you get in a situation sometimes where people come up with these great ideas and the implementation process has begun, and then other people get elected and say, no, we're going to change that now. I mean, that possibility does exist at the legislative level, doesn't it?
It does at the legislative level. It does at the local level as well. And you know, at the local level, one of the things that I'm excited about is that these plans are three-year plans. So, you know, you are setting out a multi-year approach and then figuring out what's the strategic investment we're going to do this year towards that three-year goal, knowing that things are going to be changed, right, that we're always looking at, How does this work? Is it effective? Do we need to make modifications? That's a healthy dynamic and a healthy process. At the state level, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, we've done something in California that's historic. I mean, we've basically completely shifted the system. And while it took decades to get here and many years of preparation to get it done, it ultimately happened really fast. And so, you know, there's going to be a lot of nuance and things that we're going to have to fix as we're moving forward, as we learn, you know, what's working, what's not working. And again, I think that's a healthy process.
We are talking about the local control funding formula, the LCFF for California schools. Coming up, Samantha Tron is Senior Director for Education Policy at Children Now. Samantha, thanks so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Good to have you.